integral, otherwise it takes a long time to establish the right Feynman rules. So, and I think anybody has heard quantum field theory, is this right? Good. So I can just summarize this. And of course, we start with scalar bosons because they are most simple. Okay, yeah. And of course, the most simple interacting field theory is phi to the 4. This is just a real scalar field. And yeah, in all this, when I quantize something, I need a Hamiltonian. And yeah, but relativity is nicer in the Lagrangian. So we start always with the Lagrange formalism of the Hamilton principle. So because this is then I can be sure to have a Lorentz invariant theory if I write down a Lorentz invariant Lagrangian. And the most simple one is I need some time derivatives to have dynamics. So this is the most simple term I can write down for that. Then I want the mass, which is nice, as we will learn, because there is at least no infrared problem here. And interaction term, because what we want to learn is, of course, how to evaluate interacting particles and S-matrix elements and cross-sections and all this. And yeah, now if I want to do classical field theory, I start with the action functional, which is a function of field configurations. And the nice thing is I wrote this down without commenting much. This is all fields at the same space-time point here. So the Lagrange density is a polynomial of fields and their derivatives, and not something non-local. So there is no integration kernel in over different space-time points. So all these non-localities are generated by the theory. And I'm not aware of any model which works starting from a non-local interaction. This is one of the very basic principles of local quantum field theory. But as we will learn, it has problems, because when I quantize, I make operators out of these. And then these operators are not real operators, but distribution valued, and then I have trouble. And this is the very topic of this lecture, to get rid of this trouble. And it's only there is no rigorous quantum field theory. This one should also know. So there is not a proof that any realistic quantum field theory exists, really. So the only thing we can do is can use perturbation theory and then renormalize it order by order. Sometimes you can resum and sometimes you must resum, but at the very end, there is no quantum field theory beyond the perturbative level, in a way. You can win a million of this Clay prize if you prove that QCD exists, which has a chance. QED is, I know there was a big book written once by a professor in Bielefeld, and it ended with one integral infrared divergent. He could not finish the proof that QED exists. So, in a strict sense, although it's the best theory we have in terms of comparison to experiment. The perturbative one, of course. Okay, anyway, yeah, we have this action functional and now Hamilton's principle. Of least, or one should better say stationary action, tells us that the equations of motion are derived from variation of A equals zero. This can also write down to make it a bit more can extend the time derivative over a finite interval and a spatial one over the entire space. And yeah, and that's another thing. One should look at this as that the phi, this field, is a continuous number of degrees of freedom labeled by x. Yeah, and t, of course, it's a dynamical quantity which is a function of t, and for you can see each vector x, each space is an index, so to say, of the degrees of freedom. Okay, and then yeah, and the variation is such that the fields at the ends of the time interval are fixed. Yeah, so I do a variation around the classical field, the solution of the equations of motion, and I fix it at the ends of this time interval. So that's important. Why? Because now if we calculate this variation, so what we do is we add a little increment delta phi to this field, and make the action or the variation of the action vanishing around it. So we need to, let's write it down. This is now a shorthand. I hope it's clear what I mean. So it's this one here. Huh? And yeah, so let's write it down. Yeah, what happens is if I do a little variation of phi, I get something from this and this term, but it's the same. And yeah, in principle, I have a variation of the derivative of phi times d mu phi, right? And yeah, and here two minus, I do a derivative with respect to phi times delta phi. This is of course four times this, so it's lambda over 3 factorial phi cubed delta phi. Yeah, also I don't vary the space-time argument, so delta t and delta x are zero here in this variation. Yeah, and this implies then, of course, that my delta d mu phi equals d mu delta phi, which is great because I want to write this as a functional. The bracket is wrong. This was too early. So I want to bring out the delta phi to the, this was what I anticipated here. So I want to have an expression times delta phi. Those two are nice. Yeah, they are already in this form, but only here I have to do a integration by parts. Now I use the 4D Gauss theorem, and since at the end points here, also in the spatial direction, of course, at infinity, the fields must vanish.
Yeah, Don't you have to apply the variation?
Yeah, but this gives delta d mu phi times this, and then you can do the indices like this, and then you get the same. Yeah, this is the this cancels the two here. Okay, so the only thing what happens is the sign changes, and I bring this derivative here. Ah, I should also mention my conventions, but I guess everybody here uses this. I'm a West Coast guy. I write it down in a moment, so let's just finish this. Okay, so I bring out my delta phi. Yeah, then as I said, the only thing is moving this derivative here, it just makes a minus. Now, and the rest I can copy, minus m squared phi squared minus lambda over, I keep the 3 factorial. Indeed. Have I written it right here? Yes. Cubed. Okay, now this should be 0 for all delta phi. Yeah, and then there's a theorem that implies that this guy is 0. And what you have here is just the Klein-Gordon equation with a source term like this. I keep the minus here on this side. I bring this on the other, so it's plus lambda over. So this is a Klein-Gordon equation and this reflects the interaction. It's the field interacting with itself. And this is already on the classical level, it's a bit tough, it's non-linear. Okay, just as a side, I use the following convention for the relativity. So my metric is, or pseudo-metric, this eta mu nu, and I use a mixed matrix Ricci notation, so this is just the diagonal matrix. And I use the convention major minus, so this is called the West Coast. And this is just because in our environment here in Frankfurt, I guess nobody uses the East Coast convention, or perhaps Luciano Rezzola, because the general relativists use usually the other sign. What else? D mu, I think you all know this, D mu is an lower index is the derivative with respect to an upper index. And what else? Do we need anything else convention-wise? I don't think so. Yeah, it's not much we need here. But now if you remember your quantum mechanics one, then how did one way of quantization is going from classical to quantum theory is of course always hand waving. There is no way. The other way you can do, derive classical equations or classical approximations from quantum, but not the other way, so it's always hand waving. But yeah, one way was to use canonical quantization. This chart is better. This is also bad here. Now, how did this work? The first thing was one translates all this into the Hamilton way to write it. Yeah, so the first step was Hamilton. Hamilton's principle. How worked this? You defined first canonical momenta, in this case, of course, of these fields. And this is the derivative of the Lagrangian, which is here a Lagrange density, with respect to the time derivatives. And there you already see that now I destroy my manifest Lorentz invariance, because now I distinguish time from space components. So I separate out the space, the time derivatives. So this is now in a fixed reference frame. And it's not so easy to see the Lorentz invariance from the Hamilton way, writing down things. Of course, here you have, of course, d mu phi d mu phi. This is just phi dot squared. Dot is time derivative minus the spatial derivatives. This would be Napla phi, the 3 gradient, and this is minus the 3 gradient. That's just getting the index from lower index to an upper. I need this eta, and so it just flips the spatial components and keeps the time components. So it's dealt simply Napla phi squared. Okay, so this is then with the 1/2, it's just phi dot. And then instead of using the Lagrangian or Lagrange density, you introduce the Hamilton density or Hamiltonian. And this is just the Legendre transformation, if you wish. It's perhaps I should also write it down like this. I want to have this as a function of phi, the spatial derivatives or gradients, and and the canonical field momenta. But first I write it down in this way, so it's the Legendre transformation. Instead of pi, instead of phi dot, I want pi. So I have to write it like this. And yeah, if you see that phi dot is pi, and L is one half phi dot squared is pi squared. And this is my Lagrangian written with the pi instead of the time derivative. So I finally have.
And the mass term.
the mass term. I like the mass term. Yeah.
Shouldn't there be also a factor 1/2 at the gradient term?
Very, very right. Very good.
The mass has to be squared.
Ah. Very good. You know all this, so very good. Then yeah, I write, I order it in powers of phi. Okay, so what's nice at this, the first sight you see, it's positive. This is a positive expression. There are only squares in this phi to the 4, so it's all positive. So the energy is bounded from below. So there should be, in the quantized version, a ground state. This is one of the other pillars. I don't mention all this, how to get to... You can do group theory, but then I need more than the semester. If you do the Poincaré group, you can derive everything from quite simple ideas. One is this locality, so it's something like this. At one space-time point, some polynomial, and the energy should be positive. And then it comes also out a spin statistic theorem, CPT theorem, and all this. But I don't do this here. Okay, I should speed up a bit. Yeah, now we write down our action. But now the funny thing with the Hamilton principle is now it becomes an action of phi and the canonical momenta, which are not related. We will see why, because this relation follows then as an equation of motion. This is the and then I write everything in terms, here still the Lagrangian, but I write it in terms of h. So I just need to get L, so this is yeah, now I can do the variation, extend it. Hamilton principle, yeah, you have variation delta phi, delta pi independent. And the delta phi have still these boundary conditions. These ones should it should be not the endpoints at this time interval should be fixed, but the delta pi has no restriction. I write it down for completeness because this one should keep in mind. Delta pi is free, no boundary conditions. Yeah, now I don't know. Do I have to derive it in detail? I just do the variation. The only point where I have to do something non-trivial is to use a partial derivative. Integration by parts with this, and then. Finally, I get then the Hamilton equations of motion. In terms of the density, the Hamilton density, it looks like this. And if I look here, this is exactly this equation, because where is my Hamilton density? The derivative with respect to pi is just pi. So you have phi dot equals pi. So this shows that I get back this constraint, so to say, as an equation of motion. And the pi dot is, now this looks familiar, but there is an additional term from this partial derivative, from this gradient term. Now the whole thing becomes a bit more familiar if I read these equations in terms of the Hamilton function, which is of course just the space integral of the density, Hamilton density, and then I can write this in terms of functional derivatives of H, where functional means in the sense only the spatial integrations. Now the time is just the parameter here. This makes this asymmetry between time and space. The space variables are just indices of my degrees of freedom, and the time is a parameter. If I interpret these equations like this, I get it in a very familiar form. Only that the partial derivatives in the point mechanics becomes a functional derivative and now because I have continuous labels for my degrees of freedom, my usual partial derivatives become a functional derivative. And you can check that this is nothing else than minus the functional derivative with respect to phi. Now it looks very familiar, I think. This is the Hamilton, how are those called, canonical equations, I think. Hamilton canonical equations, and you can do the exercise. You at the end you get back here. And then the next step was in quantizing is I can write algebraize this in some sense, introducing Poisson brackets, but now functional ones. If I have A and B as functionals of phi and pi, I write Poisson bracket here because usually in the operator world this is an anti-commutator, so don't get confused. And how is this defined? I have to sum over all my degrees of freedom, which is now of course an integral over these three x. And then do these anti-symmetric derivatives. It's all tx here. I don't write all the. And then minus the other way. And then you can write down these guys as phi dot is phi comma h and so on. In general, the total derivative of time derivative of A is suppose the equations of motion are fulfilled, it's just the Poisson bracket of this with h. Now comes this quantization idea. yeah, I make my fields and canonical field momenta to operators. Okay, so now comes this hand waving step. Why do I do it? Because it works. But one must be careful, it doesn't always work. It works if you want to quantize something. In this way, better use Cartesian coordinates. You don't get even the right single particle Schrödinger equation if you do this with, say, spherical coordinates in this naive way. So it's not a trivial step, but yeah. Of course, you can anyway always only compare to empirical facts. Okay, that's the most hand-waving step today, I think. So I make my classical fields, I make them to operators. In this case, even Hermitian ones, because my phi is a real field. But this is not necessarily the case. And anyway, and now, then comes then comes the next hand waving step to define what those guys do, those operators. I need something to define the algebra of them. And the algebra is a translation rule. Instead of a Poisson bracket, I write down a commutator with imaginary with an imaginary number here. This is, I explain in a moment why. The important point here is that this Poisson bracket is always evaluated at the same time. Because time is a parameter and x labels my degrees of freedom. So also here I have to use the same time arguments, but different space arguments. If I calculate the Poisson bracket of phi of t, and why should I do it? I think it's not a bad idea, so let's do it. Equal time, but different spatial arguments. And then what do I get? I get the phi. Now I need another, how to do this? Let's write x1, x2. So what do I do? How was this working? It's fine, because the derivative of this with phi gives me a delta function. It's delta 3 x1 minus x. But this guy is a 0. also here. So this gives zero. If I write instead field momentum here, then I get something. Now if I do this, I get delta 3x minus x1. Here I get delta 3x minus x2 integrated over x gives me my x one minus x2, and here phi with pi and pi with phi gives zero, so I get this. And this is precisely what I now write down as equal time commutation relations. And at this moment, at the latest here, you see all my nice Lorentz symmetry is lost. It's of course implicit, but it's not explicit anymore. And that's another reason to use the path integral formalism. If you do the Poisson bracket for two field momenta, you get, of course, also zero. And finally, the non-trivial one is this. Forbidden. And there you see those field operators are distribution valued. Here is, to be very strict, is a unit operator. Okay, now you know all how it works for the free fields when I make lambda to zero. No interactions, I can solve the equations of motion. I write down my Hamiltonian, get the equations of motion, which for the free fields are exactly the classical ones. Then I write down a mode decomposition in plane waves and get creation and annihilation operators for momentum states, and the whole thing is a multi-party, many-body theory. This is one way, but the other is path integrals. How does this work? This works very much like instead of using annihilation and creation operators or Fock states, particle number states, I use something very similar as in normal quantum mechanics. I use position and momentum operators or states. Yeah, this is like in quantum mechanics, to start with an x and p eigenstate. It's not a true eigenstate because they are not normalizable to one, but only to delta functions, and there all hell breaks loose because now we do this in a functional way. And there it's all very hand waving, one must admit, but okay. Let's do it. So introduce eigenvectors of field operators. Yeah. Okay, so it's the operator. Ah, and I forgot, this is of course now the Heisenberg picture, yeah? Because now I have my operators are functions of time and x. And if you remember, the Heisenberg picture was the one where my state cats or my statistical operators are time independent, And all the time dependence is on the observable operators. Yeah, so this is then this. So my eigenvalues get, of course, all eigenvectors get also time dependent. Yeah, and this thing, this is a classical number. This is a real number in this case because my fields are a median. And the same thing for canonical field momenta. Now it's really hard to distinguish. I hope the hat is enough to distinguish a little pi from a big pi. Capital pi is not so easy, so I hope it's clear what I mean here. Yeah, so this is just usual eigenvalue equations. And if you remember your quantum mechanics lecture, you also know how looks a momentum eigenfunction in position space in the opposite way. So this was just and it's let me see, how did I write this down? Now if I have just one dimension, it's I e to the I p x. If I have more, I sum over my labels, over my degrees of freedom. Here the sum becomes an integral. And I forget all normalization factors. It's a real gift that we do vacuum field theory where I can forget almost all of these normalization factors. Must only be careful at the very end that I normalize my cross sections right. Okay, so this is some number times x I times now. Yeah, the sum over the degrees of freedom gets an integral over the continuous degrees of freedom, and this is simply pi. And then you have, of course, the usual rules. If I write pi phi, it's the conjugate complex and so on. We also have more or less by assumption that yeah, this thing is, yeah, now comes in the next point. If you remember from usual quantum mechanics, this position states are complete. Yeah, this was written in this way. You also have an integral here because the position operator has a continuous spectrum. Also, you can decompose the unit operator in terms of these, and this is the completeness relation. Good point. This is a notational problem. Because what I have here are field configurations. These are, of course, always are always functions of space and time. So that's it, this is one of the you can think this is in the Heisenberg picture, those guys also depend on t, right? in a way you are right. It should be only a function of time. Now I have to think about a better notation. Perhaps I completeness relation. And how is it here? Here I have to integrate over all my spectral values. And here I more or less have to integrate over all field configurations. And this introduces this path integral thing, this integration over a whole field. Yeah, over a whole space of fields, whole function space. Perhaps I should just write phi pi here, which I do anyway. I think that's the right way. And if I write down simply the exp, then I can make one normalized in a functional way to a delta functional. Yeah. I can have this is a functional delta. I don't know how to write this, so I always write brackets for square brackets for functionals. So this means, what does it mean? It means if I integrate some function of phi prime, this functional, I get f at phi. That's a formal definition of this functional delta function or delta distribution. Yeah, and I can normalize one of those factors as 1, and the other then needs a 1 over 2 pi. Can formally write it. Now it becomes really bad. I mean, this is the number pi and this is the field momentum. Here you see another dilemma. This means, of course, a continuous number of products. Yeah, for each vector x, there is a factor here. It's a very multidimensional integral. Of course, the lattice guys know what to do. You make a space-time lattice and define this properly as a very multidimensional integral. But I do it the hand-waving way. You all know how complicated this is with the action and all this. I mean, I don't know it, you know it. So, yeah, there's a lot of hand-waving, but also there's a lot of hand-waving in the operator formalism. And as I said, you cannot well define it. You can read a book, and they come not more than to three fields. This axiomatic quantum field theory, of course, there are toy models in lower than 4 space-time dimensions, which you can solve exactly. But at the end, it boils down effectively. It's a free theory, usually, like massless QCD in 1 plus 1 dimensions and such funny things. Anyway, so what do we need? We need, I have no clock here, that's bad. Oops, okay. Yeah, what if I want to do dynamics, there is the time evolution operator. In this case, for my Heisenberg picture, for my operators which represent observables, and this is this is of course this one. And the h here is not time, it's time independent. This one can show from Noether's theorem. So it's this very simple expression here, but it's of course not simple to calculate. And yeah, how to calculate it, we use the path integral. Now comes this struggle. I hate this point in the lecture. This is the struggle where I do a bit of lattice. I introduce a time lattice. Oops. Ooh. Okay, so the idea is now what I do in quantum mechanics to get the propagator for my Schrödinger field or my Schrödinger wave equation, I sandwich this between position eigenvalues. This is of course, sorry, this is like this, yeah. And then I get the propagator, the full propagator of the interacting theory by sandwiching this with position eigenstates. And here in the field theory, I use my field configuration eigenstates. Yeah, and this is just this. Yeah, and now to evaluate this, this exponential is really a bad thing. To evaluate it, I use a time lattice. With time steps delta t equals the full time interval over n, where n is some large number. And then I introduce a lot of ones in terms of these completeness relations here. All those get a 2 pi in a moment. And I make it symmetric in the this is anyway obsolete to write this 2 pi to the n because I can evaluate only up to a factor, which is even ill-defined, as we will see. But fortunately, we don't need this overall factor. Okay, now comes the idea. Now I introduce a lot of ones. Now here this cancels because it's just when I integrate over d pi n, it's just 1. I just write this here as e to the I h delta t to the power n and insert some ones between these x factors. And this is the idea. So how is it going on? The next is I need a 1 here, so I need a phi, a pra phi n here. Where am I? Here. What is it? N minus 1. And so on. The very end, it's phi 2. Yeah, but the very last point here, this should be phi a. So I need this functional delta distribution like this. And this I can, of course, write as phi 1. Yeah, now why did I do all this? Now remember the Hamiltonian. This was something like this 1/2 pi squared. This was the phi dot. I hope I get all this right now. Have a good check. So this was the kinetic term, and then comes plus m squared half phi squared, right? And my interaction potential. And now comes the trick, because this guy is very, very small. So if I make my n very, very large, And then the trick is I can write this exp this I can write approximately. Usually you cannot a sum in an exponential, which is these are all operators here, of course. If I have a sum in the exponential of an operator, I cannot simply write the product of exponentials. Because if those guys do not commute, as the pi's and the phi's don't commute, cannot do this. But there is something called the Kaber-Campbell-Hausdorff formula, where you get an expression with an infinite number of commutators. But each of these terms gets an additional delta t. Yeah, so I can write this in the following way. Yeah, how should I do it? I can write it as plus h. I don't have a better idea how to write h1 of course, phi and spatial derivatives, all operators here. Yeah, and then I can write it like this. I write it down in the naive way. And yeah, something is of course not correct, so plus something of higher order in delta t. And yeah, what does this help? This helps because I wrote all my momenta to the left and all the fields to the right. Yeah, it is very simple here because there is one term only with the momenta, and all the others have only phis and derivatives, spatial derivatives. No problem. So that's called Weyl ordering. Yeah, because of course I have in principle I have a problem with operator orders here. Yeah, but it's not apparent here. But you know, in the operator formalism, if you write it down the naive way, you have the 0 point energies adding up to infinity, which you subtract, because it doesn't do anything to the dynamics, because it's proportional to the union operator. So this is the first place where you renormalize. We don't do this here, but we say everything, whenever we have a field theory, we write it in Weyl ordering. All the momenta, these canonical field momenta to the left, and all the fields and spatial derivatives to the right. So the path integral, in a way, introduces an operator ordering prescription. Yes?
What can I do if I have a product of a momentum and a field operator? And
yeah. Yeah, you just write it down in this way. You write the momenta to the left and the fields to the right. It's anyway, you don't know what to do. If you have something like this, and yeah, you know this from quantum mechanics too. If you have, sometimes you have x and p's, and then yeah, usually you symmetrize it to get an Hermitian operator, but it's not necessarily a Hermitian. It's here in this theory, but so you don't know what to do, but the path integral makes it convenient to introduce Weyl ordering. In the operator formalism, you have a problem writing down these squares and quartics and so on, because it's all distribution valued operators. And what you do in the, that's a longer story in principle. If you do it in the operator formalism, you introduce the interaction picture and write down everything in terms of the interaction picture, and then you can introduce normal ordering. Yeah, which means you bring all the annihilation operators to the right and all the creation operators to the left without taking into account the commutators, which is leaving out this, in the most simple case, the 0 point energies. And all this you do also in the interaction, but this has a trouble with gauge theories. Yeah? If you do normal ordering gauge theories, all of a sudden the gauge invariance is lost. So in Weyl ordering in the path integral, there you can formulate a gauge invariant, at least on the perturbative level, a gauge invariant formalism. But you get additional divergences, which we renormalize. Anyway, so now the funny thing is I have this Weyl ordering. This is only a function of pi. This is only a functional of phi. And here I have exactly the sandwich I like. Here I have a pi. So if I operate with this guy to the left, the only thing what happens is this pi hat gets a number, namely this eigenvalue pi 1. The same thing with this factor. Here I have a phi. So I have so I have just all the operators become normal C number functions or fields. This is the funny thing with the path integral. So what do we need? We need all these building blocks here. This guy is simple. Yeah? You have something like, where did I write it down? I have it somewhere. So I have something where always the indices are the same, 1, 2, 3, and so on, and it's the same also here. So I have an expression, pi k, modulo this correction terms at order delta t squared. Now I act with this here. Hamiltonian is always a Hermitian, so I act here with the same thing, and I get that's an eigenvector. So I get in front, I get this. And an exponential. Yeah, this is simply now these are C number functionals, right? And here now I have, as I said, I have now C numbers, then I can put, and this of course gives the H1 of phi. C numbers I can again combine here without thinking. Now hit. Yeah, and this I also know, this was my exp. No, how is it? This is the other way, so it's the conjugate complex from what I wrote down somewhere here. Yeah. This was this. So it's a minus. Pi phi, right? K. Yeah, then fortunately I also have these guys here. This is of course again an exponential, but here it has an n and n minus 1. So you have it at different time lattice sites, so to say. So I have here is the other sign, also very important, plus I. So now if I combine all this, I get something like pi. Wait. This is not, this was not very clever. I should have written this. And of course, now you have to read this index as a time argument. So this is one time step further than this. So this and this combined. So at the end, my I write down the end result, and it's, it, I hope it becomes clear. Then my it's some normalization factor, whatever. We don't need it. This is good. Also omit the two pi's, which I lump into this here. And now, yeah, but now comes the point, the pi's are totally unconstrained, while when I sum over k from 1 to n, here in all these expressions, I get an phi n plus 1. But this phi n plus 1 is, of course, phi b. And my phi 1, where is it? Here, my phi 1 is phi a. So in other words, at the very first time, the whole thing should be phi a. And at the very end, it should be phi b. Now you know what I mean. This is at the initial time, final time. And it must appear here somehow because I have it here. This is where I started from. This is the basis I express my propagator in. Now comes this argument. Now you combine all this. So you get an e to the plus I phi k plus 1 pi k minus pi k phi k. But this phi k plus 1, this I can write as delta t times phi dot. Now this is, of course, the lattice guys will kill me. This is the utmost bad worst thing I can do, I guess. Anyway, yeah. So what does this give me? This gives me an x. Yeah. Now comes this term I just discussed in the continuum limit. This gets just the integral. Of course, it sums all up in my exponentials over all k, so I get an integral over time. And yeah, now I sum up over all this. So this is delta t. Yeah, the delta t is, of course, gets the integral. Yeah, so I have a phi dot pi. Yeah, and all these guys, Hamiltonian 0 plus Hamiltonian 1 times delta t, of course I forgot over all space. Yeah, and finally I get minus I the total Hamiltonian delta t, but now again a classical Hamiltonian. This is the funny thing. And the classical Hamiltonian is just the space integral over the Hamiltonian density. Yeah, and the sum over k together with the delta t gives the time integral. And that's it. This is the path integral I'm after. This is a very nice path integral because what's in here is nothing else than with the boundaries, always very important always to keep in mind the boundary conditions. Yeah, and what's in here is just an exp of I times the action in Hamiltonian form. So it's phi pi. This is this you all have seen, I guess. Because otherwise it's very quick what I do here. Also, I nearly used my time, I guess. So let's... Yeah, and this is, looks promising. Why? Because what you have here is... where am I here? Here. This thing is, of course, nothing else than L. My Lagrangian. And this would be great if I could make this in the Lagrangian form, because then I'm back to a manifestly covariant description, and this is very, I guess the quarter hour should be enough to show this. I killed what I need. Okay. Okay, I did it in a different order, but I think this is too lengthy for the quarter an hour I have left. Did I do it somewhere? Oh, I hope I can do it without notes. So, okay, so what we have here now is our propagator with in this. This one, right? Not another bracket. Some normalization factor. Time. Has this boundaries, or it's always meant the time integral has these boundaries and the spatial integral goes over all space. And then we had our action, which is pi phi dot minus h. And now comes the trick that is very nice. Hamiltonian had this form. Yeah, and then you see what happens. The only path integrals I can do in a way is are Gaussian. And indeed, this is Gaussian with respect to this pi integral. So let me write it like this. So it's minus 1/2 pi squared minus this h1 of phi and gradient phi. Yeah, now comes, yeah, okay, now you can go and do the lattice and put it on a space-time grid. Then I have, then all this becomes sums, and I have just the Gaussian integral with a linear term in pi And yeah, what comes out of a Gaussian, multi-dimensional Gaussian? I get another Gaussian with the exponential at the point where this becomes stationary with respect to my integration variable times a factor. The factor depends not on fields, it's just numbers. This I don't know anyway. This guy is anyway ill-defined. How to calculate it? Who has heard some years ago my lecture on thermal field theory? There you need a factor and then it gets awkward. Yeah, you need also techniques to calculate it. Here you don't need it. So this Gaussian integral with respect to pi, this gives some, how to call it, entwiddle exp. How to express this? This is the exp. Now let's call all this thing all this thing here. This is the action, of course, as a functional of phi and pi. And this gives me at the end an I action phi. I don't do anything to the phi, so this is still a dummy variable I integrate over later. But my pi is such, how to call it, pi stationary, or classical. Usually people call it classical, because this, why is it? Because if I if I expand the action around the stationary point, I can do a saddle point approximation of this path integral, and then I get something in terms of classical. Yeah, the leading order is the classical action, and then come quantum corrections. Anyway, that's why this is called classical. So this is defined as the A at fixed phi. Yeah? Yeah, this is easy. Huh? Yeah, what is it? If I do the variation, I just get this variation where I only vary with respect to pi. I get from which I get, of course, and must be, this we already knew, this is the Hamilton equation, get phi dot, or no, other way around, I should write phi classical is phi dot. With the phi dot, anything you want. So what do we get? Is some other factor n prime and then I have to write down the action where I put in. For pi, I put in phi dot. What do I get? I get phi dot squared minus 1/2 phi dot squared. So it's phi dot squared minus h1. Yeah, but what was H1? This was, how was it? Now correct me again, phi 1/2 here, right? And then m squared phi squared 1/2 and yeah, so price, you get back your Lagrange form. Yeah? If I combine all this, 1/2, then I'm back at my Lagrange form. Yeah? I don't know, I write curly phis and straight phis all the way. Yeah, so that's what we like here. This is yeah, that's our starting point next time. So this is nice, this is my Lagrangian, this is manifestly covariant. And I hope I can derive Feynman rules in a covariant way from it. And that's what we do next time. Okay, thanks a lot. Ah, I forgot. If you like, you can write down your email here that I can send emails around. I have this. Has everybody seen the web page? If not, it's on my home page. FIAS, Uni Frankfurt, there is a link to the homepage for the lecture. I have a manuscript, which is more or less I wrote always down when I learned field theory. I wrote it down, full of typos, of course. Then I also gave a list of books. All this stuff is more or less from Balin and Love. This is nice because it uses only path integrals. No more operators than this. From now on, we will have more or less always only path integrals, no more operators. Okay. Then see you next week, hopefully.